following commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3215 or email radio@bnnmedia.org.
Good evening and welcome to Talk of the Neighborhoods. I'm Joe Heitzler, your host, coming to you from the BNN Live studios in Eggleston Square. Tonight, also being simulcast on our sister radio station, WBCA 102.9 FM on the dial. Tonight, all politics, as is our usual wont, and in two parts. First up tonight, one of Boston's top political strategists and consultants. He's made his chops back in the campaign for the Clinton race, the presidential race. That's Bill Clinton. He's still a young man, but he's come a long way since then. And of course, worked on many state and local races, including, of course, the race that put Marty Walsh in the mayor's seat. We're talking, of course, about Matt O'Neill. He is the principal of O'Neill Strategies Incorporated. We'll talk with him not just about local politics, but also national and state politics. Then on the second half, pleased to have joining an old friend. She was just elected to the state Senate a little more than a year ago, already earning a top post, the chair of the, or co-chair of the Joint Committee on Housing. She is a senator from the 3rd Suffolk District. We're talking about Lydia Edwards, and we'll talk with her on what's the latest at the State House. The House put out their budget. The Senate is still working on theirs. We'll see what her priorities are, and of course talk with her about the housing crisis as well. All that and more tonight on Talk of the Neighborhood. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
On Monday, tree huggers and nature lovers from all over New England gathered at City Hall Plaza to appreciate the natural beauty of Boston and spread awareness of the future of green energy.
I think Earth Day is a great day for everyone to take a moment to reflect on what the earth means to them and their consumption, and as well as other things such as their carbon footprint and maybe what they would like to do better for the world so we can, you know, have these resources for generations to come.
For me, what Earth Day means is a recognition that we need to try to be mindful of our home, planet Earth, that if we don't try to save it, nobody else is going to, and an awful lot of business interests seem to not think about what they're doing to the planet. If somebody doesn't speak up, we'll lose it, and we won't have the planet for future generations, for our children.
Attendees learned about green energy alternatives from Massachusetts Clean Energy Center and Boston Community Choice Electricity. The groups informed residents on the positive impact of renewable energy sources, like solar and wind power, while emphasizing everyone's role in combating climate change and reducing carbon emissions.
Earth Day is more than just recycling. It is taking small steps in a lot of different areas of your life to be cleaner and greener and more energy efficient. And we all need to be aware of the impact that we have on the Earth, and we all need to find ways that we can be more sustainable. And it is possible for all sorts of different types of people. It's not just the wealthy or the, you know, very successful. It's possible for all sorts of people to be sustainable.
Today is just a day to remind that every day we should be caring about our planet. Every day we should be making decisions and being intentional about how we care about our planet and making sure that we're securing it for our future generations to come to enjoy this beautiful place we call land.
It was a day for residents and visitors to admire the natural beauty of Mother Earth and treasure her abundant gifts.
To me, Earth Day means giving back to the earth that gives so much to us and lessening our footprint on this planet and appreciating all the things that we get from the planet.
It means a day where we can remember how privileged we are of living in this planet and also all the challenges that we face to make sure that it's still a good place to live for all the generations to come.
No more mass evictions!
In Medford, City Life Vita Urbana rallied with the Brooks Park Tenants Association to bring attention to the dozens of residents who the Housing Advocate Group says are victims of real estate investment groups DAH Medford LLC and Charles Gate Management.
Since last year when Charles Gate bought this building, people are struggling because they don't know where they're going to live. They have their families live right here. They don't know where to go. Because like the cost of living in Massachusetts, ridiculous, the prices and everything. And people don't have any condition to move anywhere else. Like they increase more than 70% of our rent right here. And they just give us 60 days to leave.
21 residents signed a letter to the new owners, urging negotiations with the Brooks Park Tenant Association on controlled rents and evictions. The association says Charles Gate has ignored their letter. Tenants received notices of high rent increases and threats of no-fault evictions if there's no compliance within 60 days.
So I've been here since 2001, and it's a lovely community, diverse and inclusive. And the new owners are evicting everybody or trying to evict everybody so that they can go in and do renovations and raise the rents. And it's just wrong because it's a lovely community and you want apartment buildings like that.
They want to raise the market, like raise our rents to market value, and which is just not affordable at all for anyone that is trying to live and work. And they tried to raise my rent by $200 with 2 weeks notice. I was able to negotiate it down, but they intend to raise it back up once my 6 months is up. No one can afford the insane rent prices for a studio apartment too.
Three households have gone to housing court for no-fault evictions, represented by Greater Boston Legal Services. City Life Vita Urbana is helping to lead the larger statewide fight for rent control through legislation like the proposed act enabling cities and towns to stabilize rents and the Tenant Opportunity to Purchase Act.
It's sad to see it when a large investment group comes in and they see our neighbors' homes and they look at it and they see that this is a return on investment, this is a gold bar for us, and they kick our neighbors out onto the streets without providing any alternative housing. Homes are not investments, they are places where people live and they should be treated that way.
Naturally occurring affordable housing in the community is going away because this building has been purchased and now it's going to be renovated and converted into market rate housing. What we know here in Greater Boston is that market rate housing is completely unaffordable for most people. And when affordable housing gets turned into market rate housing or luxury housing, which is what we see over and over in the community, it means that Medford can no longer be a community for people from all backgrounds, from all life experiences. It's no longer a diverse community when this leaves the city.
City Life Vita Urbana says they'll continue defending vulnerable tenants across Greater Boston. Boston Comics and Color Festival returned to Roxbury on Saturday, taking comic book lovers on a ride. The family-friendly event awakened the imaginations of young people as they thumbed through graphic novels, seeing themselves reflected in the pages created by artists of color. And that's exactly the point.
Here at Comics and Color, we say that diverse storytelling is good for everyone. We really believe that the more people tell their stories, the more understanding it can foster. It's also very important for people of color to see themselves represented in media. And not only represented, but their stories told authentically by people that look like themselves. So that's why we put this together, so that young people can come and see comics that reflect their own experience and people that look like them creating the stories.
Walking through Comics of Color, like, the main thing I see is representation. It's always a positive thing to see people who look like you, who have the same lived experience as you, actually making art and creating art and being successful in promoting their own art to the community.
For many families, the festival is a chance to bond with their kids over graphic stories. But there's a deeper message at play about the right to exist.
In the 1970s, there was this term that was created called symbolic annihilation. And basically the idea is that by not showing someone, you're kind of unmaking them or destroying them. And so when you don't see yourself reflected in the society that you participate in, it actually can unmake your self-esteem. And I think that people who are overrepresented, like, take that for granted, but it means a great deal for people who are coming from marginalized groups to see themselves reflected in superheroes and science fiction and things of that nature.
People enjoyed live art demos and buying comics directly from creators in the Artist Valley. Comic book artists appreciated seeing how their work resonated with the public.
I have a passion for telling stories through my paintings. I am exploring the idea of life and death through a sci-fi lens with goddesses and skulls. And I love when different people look at my paintings and they can get different stories and meanings and metaphors out of the same image. And I love that.
Comic book writer Barbara Thomas enjoys stepping away from the world through the art form.
Graphic novels are a great escape. They have world building in them that can take you out of this time and space. We have so much going on with social media and such negative stuff in the news, you know, the world's on fire. And when you read a graphic novel, for those few moments, you get to be in a different space. I mean, it may be post-apocalyptic in the story, but there's usually a thread of hope. There is a story arc, and it's just wonderful.
In its fourth year, Boston Comics and Color welcomed nearly 1,000 people at the Reggie Lewis Center. Organizers say the festival is vital and continues to grow.
All right, we're back with Talk of the Neighborhoods. I'm Joe Heise, your host tonight. Two-part show, all politics as is our usual want, and nobody better than I can think of on this first half to talk about politics than a man who, he made his chops back in the Bill Clinton campaign.
Oh, my
That's
God.
Right. And he's still a young man and able to talk about it. A kingmaker of sorts, I think that's fair to say. One of the top political strategists, consultants here in the Boston area. Worked on several campaigns, including most recently Marty Walsh's effort to become mayor. And I'm pleased to have with me Matt O'Neill. He's the principal of O'Neill Strategies. And nice to have you here, Matt.
Nice to be here.
Well, you know, to give our viewers some perspectives, you know, I said you go back to the Clinton campaign, but tell us how you got your start in politics.
I will tell you that I grew up in the city, in Charlestown.
Yep.
Back in the day when Charlestown was very poor and very tough and very insular, actually. Yep. And
Mother Galvin days, or
it is, yeah. Kevin White,
Kevin White.
And back in the day, the way you got a summer job was you did a little bit of work for a politician.
Yeah.
And so when I was a teenager, early teens, I would go dropping leaflets and things like that, and that's how I got my summer jobs, and that got me into the business, and I just took a shine to it. I really enjoyed making a difference, if you will.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I saw that on your resume that you also worked in South Dakota on the campaign.
I did. I'm originally
from South Dakota, so that got my
no kidding.
That got my eye. But talk about worlds away.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, from out there on the prairies all the way back here.
But yeah. Crazy story. So I did all of the primaries for the presidential campaign, and I was one of the
92 or 96.
92.
Yeah.
And I was one of the first 10 people on the campaign. Yeah. And after the primaries were over, I went to the DNC for a while, and they said, hey, we want you to go run a state for the president, the candidate.
Yeah.
Wasn't the president yet. And I said, well, what are my options? And they said, well, you go to Pennsylvania, you go to New York, you can go to Illinois, and you go to South Dakota. I said, I'll go to South Dakota. And they looked at me like, are you crazy? And I said, listen, I said, I have no reason to go to South Dakota. I will never go to South Dakota in my life, I don't believe. I said, so this is the opportunity. I said, and more importantly, we've never won South Dakota. So my goal is to go to South Dakota and be the first Democrat to win.
Well, and if I recall correctly, you didn't win.
We didn't win.
But that's a
that's another story.
A ruby red state, and very interesting. And I we could talk about that for.
Yeah.
But help people to understand. And of course, this is in the age of Trump. A lot of things have changed. But how has politics changed in that time since? What's your thoughts on?
I think. We've become very tribal, number one. Number two, I think that folks are feeling less inhibited, if you will, as to expressing negativity and anger and hostility.
Do you think that was always there, but just they held it back? Or?
I think much of it was always there, but it wasn't acceptable.
Right.
Right, and it's, he's Trump made it acceptable.
Correct. He made it politically correct to express your thoughts, no matter how hateful sometimes they may be. And
exactly,
I think that's fair to say. As you talk to, and I'm sure you get all kinds of candidates that come to you and want to talk to you and pick your brain because of your vast experience. What do you tell them? What do you tell them about running these days?
It's not a lot has changed as to how you should present yourself as a candidate. It's really about getting out there and meeting people and sharing your thoughts about where things are and where you'd like to take them. Mm-hmm. And the sort of the negativity comes in once the campaign engages.
Right.
If it should come in, that's when it'll come in. But as a rule, out of the box, run your campaign. Run a positive campaign and be what you hope to be and what people want you to be.
Right.
And if the other stuff happens,
so be it, right? Yeah. And how do you decide who you accept as a client? I mean, of course, Bill Clinton was a long shot when he first started running. The comeback kid, finished, what was it, third in New Hampshire and still was the comeback kid
and went
on to win it all. But but not just that. I mean, even Marty Walsh was a long shot.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah.
And How do you decide who you end up helping, and how do you?
I as a rule, folks call me all the time, as you can imagine,
sure.
And I try to give the best advice I can to everybody that calls.
Yeah.
With respect to my ability to actually work directly with somebody, I don't do that as much anymore. I more sort of fly up here and give advice, but if I am to do it, it's with somebody that I think. Just shares my values, mm-hmm. and because that's important to me. I guess I would be the alter ego to Donald Trump. I look for the best in people. I think that we're in a tough period right now, but we'll come out of it and we'll be all the better for it.
Right. And you primarily work with Democratic candidates.
Only.
Only with Democratic candidates. And of course, this is a presidential election year, and of course, the rematch—Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Now all the most recent polls show Biden losing even in the battleground states. And so what's your take on it? You've been watching presidential politics for a long time. Can Joe Biden come back? Can he win this thing?
Yeah, I look at a lot of polls every day. And I will tell you that it's a virtual toss-up.
Yeah. It really is that. It's going to be that close
again? Yeah, it's
again?
That close, yeah, yeah. At this point. Now, obviously, 4, 5, 6 months is a lifetime in politics, and anything can happen. Yeah. The economy is a primary issue, but immigration is certainly up there. Abortion, female
sure.
rights and freedoms. Yeah. I think if Biden can pull together the same coalitions that he had 4 years ago, and if young voters come out and vote for Biden as they did 4 years mm-hmm. ago, I think he's got a reasonably good chance of winning again. But it's going to come down to 3, 4, 5 states. That's
right.
it.
Well, and some of these supposedly, especially around some issues that are proving very divisive, including, of course, the war in Gaza and Israel, and whether that ends sooner or later, and what the outcome. Now you're seeing all these demonstrations across the country, all these, including right here in Boston. Does that have a enough of an effect in your mind that could change the outcome of the race?
I think it could, depending on how it progresses from here, or if it progresses from here. I mean, I'd like to think that the youth help the elders. Understand what's important and how we should lead. And so I have a 21-year-old daughter who we have this discussion. We had a 2-hour discussion last week on this very mm-hmm. issue. And the wonderful thing about kids is they're not necessarily party driven, they're issue driven.
Right.
But on the other hand, they're very simplistically issue driven, so they don't understand the 1,000-year
right.
conflict that's happening here. But
right.
But as a practical matter, I think that I think this issue will resonate. I don't know that it affects Biden negatively at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I saw today that he finally came out and made a statement about the protests, and I said to my daughter, this brings me back to the 70s, and the Vietnam War and
yes,
all the other things.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about
yeah,
that.
And I was out there protesting, and I said to her, I said, listen, if you want to go protest, I'm all for it. I'm behind you. I said, my only issue is don't do anything that's against the law.
Right.
Freedom of speech is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
As long as we keep it a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Don't be busting into any buildings and breaking the
exactly.
glass.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no need for that.
Well, it's talking about it, and I want to talk about some state and local issues and races as well. But the thought that after all that happened, including January 6th, that it could be this close, that it may come down to a few thousand votes,
mm-hmm.
Seems so incredible to a lot of people that are watching it. And I wonder, and you sounded an optimistic note at the top of the show that things will get better. But do you also worry that, you're obviously a Democrat, not rooting for Trump, but if Trump were to get elected, what might happen in this country?
I absolutely worry about that. Yeah. I mean, if you've seen what the, who's the Republican group, the Federalist group or
right.
whatever they're
yep.
called.
Federalist Society.
Yeah, they've put out a sort of an outline of what he is going to do were he to be reelected.
Yeah.
And it's, to me, it's pretty frightening, actually. It's not a democracy, right. what they're talking about. So I worry, absolutely.
Well, and I think he made a statement that, to the effect that, people like it when he talks about being a dictator. So, I mean, it really makes you wonder, though, what's happening in the country, and it's, at times it's hard to keep faith.
It's extremely hard to keep faith. And listen, he says crazy things all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
one even more outrageous than the
absolutely.
Next.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't seem to have any effect.
No, I mean, and I would say, I was actually listening
older times, or you know, prior times, it would have been disqualifying to have said something that
long gone.
Oh my
absolutely.
God, you know, you'd be out of the race.
Absolutely.
You know?
But I was listening to a webinar last night about the presidential election, and it was an expert, a psychological expert, and they were talking about the notion that this has really become a cult.
Yeah.
And there is no persuading them with facts. It's just, right. It's,
yeah,
you know,
no, it's beside,
don't bother.
Almost
you know?
Beside the point. So
yeah.
Whether or not he's convicted of a crime, it may not matter. Well, and you know, several other trials, we'll see if they take place before, you know, and even
remains
whether
seen,
the Supreme Court allows him to go forward.
Well, and he knows he set the Supreme Court up to.
Yeah, so anything can happen.
Yeah.
Let's talk some local politics here. How is Maura Healey dealing? I mean, she lived kind of a charmed life during the gubernatorial race. You know, really no opposition to speak of in the primary, and then you know, easily won in the general election. And of course, this is a you know very dark blue state at this point, so no surprise there. But she seems to have hit a few bumps in the road here lately, and. Now you're not advising her.
But, I'm not advising.
But if
her,
you were,
no.
What would you advise her to? Don't set up tolls at the at the New Hampshire border.
Not at this point in time. Anyway, I actually think she's doing a good job. I mean, you know, she came into a. She's never been a CEO.
Right.
Right. And so there's a transition right. period. And
management I think is a different.
Absolutely.
Course,
and I think it was brilliant to bring. Kim along with her because she managed
the Lieutenant Governor Driscoll,
yes,
right?
Yeah, she's managed the city for 20 years,
right.
give or take, and really knows her way around and how to manage. And so I think as a tandem, they're doing a good job. I think some of the issues that, I mean, listen, immigration wasn't something that she planned for.
No one did,
and,
right?
And it's funny, I was on a call with some folks on a national call about the presidential campaign a couple months back, and the gentleman went through a whole poll that they just completed, and he never mentioned the immigration issue. And I said to him, I said, is there a reason you didn't mention immigration? Is that not an issue anymore? And he says, oh, my God, he says, it's the number one issue. And I said, I get that, because until it moved from Texas and Florida, we never really understood the magnitude of the problem.
No, I don't think so either.
You know,
do you think Joe Biden does now?
Yes, I think
he
does.
You know, better late than never, but and of course it's just you know been twisted around what in fact is involved there, but still nonetheless the numbers are enormous, and you know I think everybody's in agreement that you know there's got to be some control at the border.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And listen, this issue legally should have been fixed years ago.
Yep.
And our Congress just couldn't get their act together to do it because it wasn't beneficial to one side or the other.
Right.
And most recently is a couple of months ago.
Yeah,
again,
you know,
But as a practical matter, it needs to be fixed because, in reality, we need immigrants.
Right.
We are all immigrants. And our economy can't be sustained over the long term without immigration.
Right.
Just can't.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people are missing. Of course, you know, there's always a lot of intangibles, and of course, those who oppose it grab onto whatever it is, whether there's a crime committed by someone that, which has happened recently here and in many places. But there's also the labor shortage, and it's acute in many ways. All right, Mayor Wu, how's she doing?
I think, as with
the now, you're not involved with her campaign or her administration.
No, I actually helped out in her campaign.
Okay.
Yep. And I think, as with the governor, she's there's a learning period. I think she has some great ideas. You know, the practical application is always the difficult part, right? You know, taking an idea and making it reality. I think it remains to be seen how some of these ideas play out. But I think, you know, that's you know, we have to try new things,
right?
And she's willing to, and time will tell if the folks accept
that. I give her points, you know, big points for trotting out some of these ideas, which have not really been put forth before, at least extensively, but it'll be interesting to see. Has the tone and tenor of politics in the city changed?
If we look at the city council,
yeah,
it sure has,
right? But it, does that fairly reflect, do you think, of what's happening in the city? You're as a townie, who grew up and, kind of innately understands some of the factors at play there. How do you see it?
I don't think the neighborhoods have that same animosity, if you will.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Right.
You know, that's not to say that there aren't pockets here and there, but by and large, I don't see sort of the discourse that we've seen on the council. I don't see that in the neighborhoods per se.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know what the solution is on the council other than, I honestly don't know what the solution is.
Yeah, there seems to be some dysfunction there, and I think maybe I'm being kind. I don't know. But Charlestown has changed dramatically.
Oh.
Southie is, not your father or your mother, even your cousins are Southie anymore. Somewhere between the waterfront and just what's happened housing-wise at Dorchester, same mm-hmm. thing, highly sought after. Did you ever think you'd see the day that...
I wish I had that crystal ball, I'll tell you.
I'd have been
a wealthy man, yeah. And listen, things change. That's you can't improve if you don't change.
Right.
And, the sad part is, I'm guilty at times myself, we're all sort of hesitant about change. We don't want change because it's uncomfortable.
Right.
And it's nice to be in a comfort zone. And the one issue I think that speaks to that dramatically is the housing issue.
Yeah.
And if we don't solve this housing crisis, to me, it's the number one issue in Massachusetts.
Right.
We are going to have a tough time economically in the years ahead. So I think that's
talking about where people will live, who will be there here to work, and how can they afford to live
here. They can't.
Here.
They just can't.
Who do you see? We've got just a couple minutes left. Your perspective on up-and-coming politicians, people you think have a lot of upside and a chance to...
I will tell you who I think the shining stars is your next guest.
Yeah.
I think she's a terrific politician.
Yeah, I do too.
I think she's smart as hell.
Yeah.
She is not afraid.
Yeah.
And she's she has good ideas and she's not afraid to push them. And I really think she's somebody to keep an eye on.
Right.
I think the Attorney General is somebody that... has a future beyond she's at, whatever that might be.
Yeah.
Obviously, the mayor.
Yeah.
I think she's looking beyond the mayor's office, and I think she'd be great in Congress, quite frankly.
Yeah.
You know, she's just a big thinker, and we need people like that. Yeah. So I think there's some really good talent.
Elizabeth Warren is running for re-election, and who knows whether... Senator Markey runs again or not?
He said he is.
I know. He just keeps running and he keeps winning.
He does. He does.
The case. You worked with the Kennedys back in the, JK2 or however you want to refer
yes.
them.
Yeah.
The first Joseph Kennedy, not the first, but the first elected as a congressman, took Barney Frank's seat.
Great experience.
Yeah. And then young Joe, of course, who won, but. He came up short in the Senate race. Now, Bobby Kennedy, brother, uncle to young Joe, running. Now, the Kennedys have said, how do you see that playing out and given what you know about the Kennedys? And I'm not telling you, asking you to tell secrets.
No. I think Bobby's a really smart guy.
Yeah.
And I just think he's misguided in some respects, and certainly the anti-vaxxer thing, and I actually met with a couple of those groups a number of years back. A buddy of mine said, you know, can you talk to these people? They're looking for some advice on how to work the legislature. And, and so I said, yeah, I'll talk to anybody. So I talked with them and I left there and I said, oh my God, I mean, it's just, you know, it's conspiracy and this and that and the other thing. And Bobby bought it hook, line, and sinker. And so
surprised?
No. Yeah. No. Yeah. Having, you know, seen him and known him, not a lot, but not well. Yeah. But I think the question becomes, you know, what does that mean for the race?
And, could it throw the race?
It could.
I mean, the poll numbers, you said you look at a lot of polls. What polls do you like? What do you put a lot of credence in?
I like Ipsos.
Yeah.
I think they do a good job.
Yeah. Yeah.
GSG out of D.C., there's another group that does a good job. Yeah. And I think Bobby...
The poll numbers I've saw, you know, they put them in double digits in a lot of cases.
Yeah. I think that's now. I think that'll fade.
Yeah.
You know, and the question is, you know, even if it's 3% or 5%, that could change the dynamic of the race. Sure. And so... I think the jury's still out as to which way those people go. You know, are they Trump voters going for him that are just tired of Trump and they can't vote for a Democrat? Yeah. Or are they Democrats that say we love the Kennedys and, you know, anything a Kennedy says, we're there?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, it'd be a very, very interesting dynamic. And just a couple minutes left. And what about the Haley voters in the Republican column? Where do they go? What do they do? She still got in Pennsylvania, what was it, 18% of the vote or something like that in the primary?
Yeah.
And 6 weeks after she dropped out of the race, and of course that's an easy one, but where do those never Trumpers go, or those who said they were never Trumpers?
I think you'll see sort of a break. I think some of them are going to hold their nose and vote for Biden, and I think the others are going to either vote for Bobby or stay home.
Yeah,
you know, I think they, and you know, this the governor. That's a great unknown. How about the governor of South Dakota from your old state?
Oh my God!
You know, I mean, anybody that can do that, I'm dumbfounded. Yeah.
Well, interesting. I grew up on a farm, and so I understand. We never shot our dogs, don't get me wrong.
Right.
You see a lot of animal death, mainly because of disease. So it's not something alien, but nonetheless, I mean, you talk about putting not just 1 foot or 2 feet in your mouth. I mean, that's pretty much killed her chances. I think that's fair to say to be the vice presidential.
I hope so. God help us.
I have my own thoughts about how she's done out there. Matt O'Neill is the principal of O'Neill Strategies. He's been around for a few years. Sharing his insights with us tonight on the upcoming presidential race course and some local and state politics as well. I appreciate you coming in, Matt.
Thank you for
nice to see you. You come back?
Absolutely.
I hope so.
Absolutely.
When we come back with more of Talk of the Neighborhoods, Senator Lydia Edwards, up and coming in her own right, will be joining us, and we have a few minutes to talk with her yet. Stay tuned for more of Talk of the Neighborhoods. We'll be right back.
You have walked many paths to get to this place, but today, you are all Americans.
On Wednesday, 200 Boston residents received naturalization status at a ceremony hosted by U.S. District Court Federal Judge Julia Kobik and the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. For many of these new citizens, the process of achieving naturalization has been a long journey.
It means everything. I've been on visas I've been in the U.S. for 16 years. And I've worked so hard. It's such a relief to be able to get the opportunities to continue working and contributing to the U.S. And it's such a beautiful country. I can't wait to explore it more.
From the heart, it's a big day for me. I came to this country when I was about 3.5 years old, and now I'm 31. And it's been a very long time coming. I've basically lived here in the United States most of my life, and I know nothing else. So for me, it's one of the biggest days of my life. It's kind of like a huge weight off my shoulders and something I look very forward to, just being a citizen and being able to exercise my rights that I can after living in this country for so many years.
Residents wave their American flags with pride and gratitude, welcoming a new identity as naturalized citizens.
It means a lot to me to become a U.S. citizen today, especially after a long journey. I feel grateful for this country because it gives me a better life, a better chance at education, and a better chance for my family. I learned a lot throughout this journey. I have my education mainly in the U.S. I'm very grateful for the opportunity, and that's why I'm here. I'm proud to become a U.S. citizen.
I barely can describe what I'm feeling right now, but it's something great that is finally getting to the end of where I can see myself being realizing, because it was something that I tried to become a citizen for a long time, and now it's going to be finally possible.
From uplifting their families to being able to vote, everyone had a reason to be joyful about the day.
My wife, my father, my mother, and my siblings, they will be able to come finally here. I applied for my wife 3 years ago, and she was not able to come yet. I feel like becoming a citizen will help me bring her over quickly. Also, I'll be traveling across overseas, everywhere, with like U.S. citizen will help me a lot.
I've been in the country since I was very young, but I've been fighting for my citizenship for about 4 years now. It's very important to me because the responsibility of becoming a citizen is huge. Now I get to vote, I get to contribute to government. I get to feel like I'm part of the country I've been in for so long.
All allegiance and fidelity.
All allegiance and fidelity.
24th prince.
24th prince.
Potentate.
Potentate.
State or sovereignty.
State or sovereignty.
All right, we're back with Talk of the Neighborhoods. Talking in this segment with, one of those, Matt O'Neill, was touting as up-and-coming leaders in the state. She is, of course, now the state senator for the 3rd Suffolk District. I'm talking about former Boston City Councilor Lydia Edwards. And nice to have you here. Thanks so much for coming in.
Nice to be here.
We've got a few minutes left, and I appreciate you coming. I got to ask you, first of all, about the life in the Senate. You went from potholes to public policy, and I know you've got some expertise in all those areas. How's it been? I mean, you landed a plum assignment up there. You're the co-chair of the housing committee at the time when it might be the most important issue the state is facing.
It probably is, next to child care, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
I will have to say I love it in the Senate. It's policy. It's your impact is statewide when you're thinking about things. You know, I've met people all over the state to hear housing from Chester, Massachusetts, population 1,200, to go out to the Cape, to go up to Gloucester, to go all over the place is wonderful to really understand what the challenges are for everybody in the state. And I will have to say, the potholes never leave you, by the way. once you fix a pothole, they're going to find you because you fix the last one, you're going to fix this one too. So potholes never go anywhere.
Well, I'm sure they're wanting to hear what you think a long ways from your district. In Milton, for instance, I got to ask you about the MBTA Communities Act and the state's effort to address the housing crisis.
So,
and I think it's fair to call it that. That's interesting development. And how do you see that happening there?
Well, I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. Yeah. Let's just start with the big picture. We need about, conservatively, 220,000 new units in housing to keep up with the need in order to help stabilize our state's housing stock and also, as we're graduating, you know, tens of thousands of people every year from our colleges and universities, we want those brains, we want those investments to stay here, but they're not. So we need to build that. And so the issue has been, we've had laws on the books for many years, 40B, and towns just ignored them.
Right.
And then the state ignored that they were ignoring them. And everyone just ignored the problem. And so here we are at this point now when The Republican, Charlie Baker, passed a law that basically said if you are getting state infrastructure, the buses, the T's, the ferries, and you're using that every day to commute, and you're using these massive infrastructure projects, we need a population to support that. And we're going to build housing by it so that maybe we won't have to rely so much on our cars. And so all it does is basically say have a multifamily district near that public transportation. That was 3 years ago, by the way. It's been the law for 3 years. Now the implementation and Governor Healey. And cities and towns, in many cases, are arguing about infrastructure or students. And some are just outright NIMBYs and don't want any more people in their city or town. And that's just not the way zoning works. That's not the way our Constitution works. I think it's Article 60 that the state has given the power of zoning. But this is not something, this is not the United Cities of the Commonwealth where you have independence.
What about the state's response now, just denying grant funds to communities that don't comply with that? You think that's the proper course?
That's the course of most programs, right? If you don't meet the standards of a program, you don't get the funding for it. And that's the truth for all aspects. So I think that it's really a matter of the investment and the amount of commitment. And if you don't want to follow the laws, I don't know why you think you'd also get the money.
Yeah, we shouldn't be surprised at that point. Very quickly, of course, the looming nationally and now the state is the whole immigrant crisis, whether you call it influx or whatever, but certainly it's putting a strain on the state budget at a time when revenues are dropping off. And of course, the House just passed their budget, including a SUP that addresses some of that. But there's been now some limits put on
on the amount of
that
stay.
Works. And is that the response that you'd like to see? And what's the mood of the Senate on those kinds of issues?
The response that I'd like to see is one of a massive economic engine that recognizes that workers are here and coming and are documented. And I'll repeat that again. They are documented. They are legal immigrants. And we are waiting for the federal government to give us work permits.
Work permits.
And when that happened, there were two incidences where they had work permits workshops. And they gave about 3,000 work permits. And do you know, on average, it took about 10 days for them to leave the shelter. So they did what immigrants do for generations, which is you and me and our kids and whatever. We go to a triple decker, we go to an apartment, and you work the night shift, I work the day shift. We're taking care of each other's kids. This is normal. This is what immigrants have been doing. So if those work permits come in, they'll do what they normally do. They did not come here to sleep on the floor in Logan. They did not come here to wonder when their next kind of meal is or what's going on. They came here to work. And I think that that's what we need to be seeing it as, an economic catalyst. And we're not. Instead, we are, due to the federal government's inaction or slow action, we're slowed. We're slowed down. And so, yes, the governor had to act. I did not like a cap. Yeah. I did not like it. But I knew that part of being a legislator is what you like, don't like. It's a matter of compromise and getting things done.
Right, so, likely some version of that likely to make it through the Senate, you think?
I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say incredible debate's going to happen in the Senate, that's for sure.
Going to look at it, certainly. talking about it, of course, a lot of things that happened. I understand there's no more delays on the blue line. I'm sure you must have had something to do with that. What about the... at least urging them to go on. What about the mayor's tax package that she put up? It'd be a home rule petition to change the mix of commercial to residential in an effort to, as she put it, to keep the level of taxation on residences down somewhat. But some of the business community have said, you risk kind of killing the goose that's laid the golden egg, to put it lightly. But what do you think the chances of that getting through?
I mean, look, no one likes taxes. The business community especially doesn't like taxes. I think what she's also offered, though, is opportunities for tax tax relief when it comes to building affordable housing, and she's also offered zoning relief for commercials. She's offered so many different opportunities to also support our commercial community through grants as well. This isn't just she woke up one day and said, we're going to have taxes. Mm-hmm. And she is trying her best to make sure that we're not waking up one day saying we don't have the money for our police, our fire, and our education. So if it
She's trying to get ahead of the curve, so
I think so, and I think that's a matter of leadership. Yeah. No one likes it. Yeah. I mean, but she has to make those difficult decisions. Yeah. I hope that we're in a position one day where, you know, those taxes aren't going to continue. But right now, if that's what we need to make sure that all of our kids are going to school, that all of our infrastructure and our fire, our police, our city workers, our DPWs, our potholes are getting filled, then if that's what the cost is, I think if Mayor Wu presents that as that's what the cost is, then we got to pay it.
Well, of course, you know, in this age, this era, when you know revenue you know, depends upon who you talk to, the estimates of it, what can and can be done. Talk about compromise. And now, of course, the city council has more budgetary authority than it had before.
You're welcome, guys. You're welcome.
I know.
You're welcome.
But the city council hasn't always worked so well together, and. How do you think they're doing? There's a new council now.
It's a new council, and I feel that so not being able to work together and not being functional are two different things, right? Disagreeing is a good thing. I like that there's a debate over things, that there's different perspective. This is a big city with a lot of different perspectives. So, but I would give the city council a B+, a solid B+. I mean, they have been so far moving things on time. It looks like they're about to enter budget season. Mm-hmm. I see them at different all over the city in rallies. I have seen the individual district councilors be incredibly responsive. So I like them. I mean, I like the council. I hear from them at the State House. Yep. We talk regularly.
Well, and even though you're no longer at City Hall, you're at the State House, it hasn't stopped you from you know, keeping a hand in local politics. You're not afraid to. You've endorsed some people. I know you were recently endorsed your campaign chairperson or co-chairperson for in the race. Talk about local politics for the Suffolk County Clerk of Criminal Courts, I believe it is.
The SJC, Supreme Judicial Court.
The Supreme Judicial Court, but it's voted on in Suffolk County, including, you know, a good part of your district, because you also have, talk about...
I have Revere, and I have Winthrop, and then I have a good chunk of Boston. Yep. So I have three of the four cities in my district, or parts of them. And yes, no, I happily am the co-chair for Allison Cartwright. She's running for clerk of the Supreme Judicial Court.
What made you decide to jump into a race like that? Don't you risk...
I'm a lawyer first. Yeah? I'm a lawyer first. I was a lawyer, and that's how I got into politics and representing workers and so on and so forth. And I remember when I was sworn in as an attorney by Maura Doyle.
Yep.
Right? And I remember getting letters from her and paying my bar dues, and seeing the clerk as kind of an overseer for a lot of us attorneys, all of them.
Yep.
So that's one part. And I would not want to be policed or overseen or sworn in by someone who doesn't know what it feels like to take the bar, who doesn't know what it feels like to go to law school, who doesn't know what's at risk. You know, when they say, you're going to lose your license or we're going to enforce a decision from the BBO, I want someone to understand the gravity of those decisions. And I think you need to have that experience. I also... Allison is a lawyer's lawyer. She's not just any lawyer. Yeah. 30 years.
Well, she was here. She's very well spoken.
Yeah, managing director of public defender. She's defended people all over the county. Yeah. Yeah. And so the access to courts and making sure the courts are doing their job has been her job and life's work. Yeah. So when I think of this opportunity to have that perspective, that experience, be the bridge and also the welcoming greeter for the new attorneys for the Commonwealth, I can't think of anyone more qualified.
Regardless of whether it you know, affects your relationship with counselors and You've
this is
into,
politics.
This is politics.
This is politics. I mean, relationships are. I mean,
matter.
They matter, but they also change race per race. So maybe I'll be endorsing people for council another time, but I won't be endorsing them for clerk of SJC. Right. You know, people were with me when I was a city councilor that were against me when I was running for Senate. It's politics.
Right.
It's not personal. And if you do take it personal, this is not the job for you.
Get out of the business.
You got to get out.
Well, you know, Matty O'Neill was here, and he says you are one of the bright stars on the horizon, up and coming. I appreciate you coming in tonight and sharing with us. As always, nice to have you here.
Thank you so much.
All right. You've been watching Talk of the Neighborhoods on the Boston Neighborhood Network. We're here tonight and every Thursday night at the same time. We'll be back next week. Until then, for the entire staff and crew here at BNN, I'm Joe Heisler, your host. Thank you for watching. Have a pleasant evening. Good night.
The preceding commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3215 or email radio@bnnmedia.org.